TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Shoshana Zuboff, Surveillance Capitalism and Democracy, Part 2 of 2. Shoshana Zuboff is the author of The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. She reveals a world in which technology users are the raw material for new procedures of manufacturing and sales. They define an entirely new economic order, a surveillance economy. Some now claim that Facebook and Cambridge Analytica played a larger role in Donald Trump's election victory than Russia. In part one, Shoshana Zuboff quotes from a leaked Facebook document that the AI hub is capable of ingesting trillions of data points every day. They're able to produce 6 million predictions of human behavior each second. These predictions are about us, but not for us. They are sold to business customers and political campaigns in a new kind of market, the human futures market. In this part of her talk, Zuboff describes how human behavior is not just observed, but influenced to make a particular consumer or political choice. Zuboff spoke in Berlin on November 6, 2019, at the Alexander von Humboldt Institute for Internet and Society. She began with Facebook.
Facebook published one in 2012, another one in 2014, what they called their massive-scale contagion experiments. The first one was to see if they could change people's voting behavior, not necessarily who they voted for, but just to get them to go vote rather than not voting at all. The second one was to see if they could change people's emotions, make them happier or sadder. So when the researchers wrote up these experiments, they celebrated two findings. Number one, we now know that we can manipulate subliminal cues and social comparison dynamics on Facebook pages to change real-world behavior and emotion. We know we can do that. Number two, we now know that we can do this while bypassing user awareness. It's undetectable. They never know that we're doing it. That's what makes successful economies of action. Why? Because awareness is friction. Friction is expensive. If I know about it, I might refuse. I might look for a way to hide. I might look for a way to camouflage. So awareness is friction. Awareness is the enemy. These kinds of systems have to be designed to bypass awareness. Okay, great. Contagion experiments. Now we're on to an even more sophisticated zone of experimentation. And this one I am certain that you know about. How many people in this room went out in the streets of Berlin and played Pokemon Go with your friends and family? Come on, audience participation. You can be honest, we're all friends here. Oh, don't be shy, I know this isn't true. All right. Well, did you know that Pokemon Go came from Google? So, Pokemon Go was incubated in Google. Now, of course, Germany was famous for being the first country to contest Street View, right? And Pokemon Go was invented by the same guy who was the boss of Street View, who was the same guy who invented Google Earth. Before that, it was called Keyhole, and it was invested in by the CIA before Google bought it. So this is a man, John Hankey, who has a long history how to fill the supply chains, how to fill the supply chains on their way to the new factories. So this man, John Hankey, had a little shop inside Google. It's called Niantic Labs, and that's where they incubated these new augmented reality games, including Pokemon Go. When they brought it to the market, of course, they distanced themselves from Google. Niantic Labs became an independent little company and brought it to market that way, so no one would know that this came out of Google. Turns out that when you were playing Pokemon Go, you were actually playing a little game within a bigger game. All right, so let's go back to the first round of surveillance capitalism. What was the first really, really successful prediction product? Okay, that was the click-through rate. Because the click-through rate, we think of it as a click-through rate, but actually, just you only have to think about it for another couple of seconds, and you realize that the click-through rate is a computational fragment that's predicting a piece of human behavior, right? And of course, what were the first markets in human futures? That's where these click-through rates were sold, these predictions were sold. So that first market, insanely lucrative market in human futures, was called online targeted advertising. And it's still insanely lucrative. However, we now see that same structure now juxtaposed, translated to the real world. In Pokemon Go, Niantic Labs had established its own human futures markets. So they had business customers, not online, but in real life, like McDonald's and Starbucks, the real shops, the real establishments, or Joe's Pizza and Harry's Bar. So they had these businesses paying them not for guaranteed click-through, but for guaranteed footfall. People's real feet falling on the real floor of real places. Guaranteed footfall. And so the idea with Pokemon Go was how to use gamification, the rewards and punishments of gamification, in order to herd people through the cities to the places where their feet were guaranteed to be. Right? So that's another phase in the work of economies of action and figuring that out. Now, here's another phase. Comes a little bit later, and now we're back at Facebook. And this comes from another leaked document. This was written by Facebook executives, written for its Australian and New Zealand customers. So this is a report that is selling its business customers on the following idea. We have so much information. Now remember, monitoring to actuation. We have so much information on 6.4 million young people, high school students, college students, and young adults in Australia and New Zealand, that we can now predict their emotional state on a daily and weekly basis. We can see their emotional cycles across the 7 days of the week, and we can predict where they are going to be in this emotional cycle. We can predict things like if they feel stressed, defeated, overwhelmed, anxious, nervous, stupid, silly, useless, or a failure. And with these predictions, we can alert you to the exact moment of maximum vulnerability when, if you send a message that contains a confidence boost, you will be successful. So, for example, let's imagine that you have a sexy black leather jacket to sell. Well, we can tell you when to sell it, how to sell it, what to say in your message. And by the way, make sure they know you're going to sell it on a Thursday night because that's when they're most anxious because the weekend is about to appear. Tell them that you can have it delivered for free to their door the next morning, throw in a little price discount, and we can guarantee you success. All right, so that's another phase, economies of action, monitoring to actuation. All right, so You know, sometimes I hear people saying to me, you know, Shoshana, I mean, take your point, but really, businesses, advertisers, commerce, always try to persuade people. You know, always try to change people's behavior and get them to buy something that they didn't want to buy. So really, Shoshana, there's nothing new about this. And of course, that's true. But let's not lose our bearings. Because what is new here is that at no other time in history have the wealthiest private corporations had at their disposal a pervasive global architecture of ubiquitous computation, able to amass unparalleled concentrations of information about individuals, groups, and populations, sufficient to mobilize the pivot from the monitoring to the actuation of behavior remotely and at scale. This, my friends, is unprecedented. What is this new power? It works its will through the medium of digital instrumentation. It's not sending anybody to our homes at night to take us to the gulag or the camp. It's not threatening us with murder or terror. It is not totalitarian power. But it is a new and unprecedented form of power, just as totalitarianism presented itself as a new and unprecedented power in the 20th century. This new power is what I call instrumentarian power. It works its will remotely. It comes to us secretly, quietly. And if we ever know it's there, it might actually greet us with a cappuccino and a smile. Nevertheless, it represents a global means of behavioral modification and is the engine of growth for surveillance capitalism. We've now climbed a mountain. We've climbed the mountain of the division of learning. And we've peeked inside the fortress, into the AI hub, into these backstage operations. And what have we found? A frontier operation run by geniuses, funded by immense amounts of capital. Are they solving the climate crisis? Are they curing cancers? Are they figuring out how to get rid of all those plastic particles that now even are detectable in the Arctic snow? No, they're not doing any of that. Instead, all of that genius and all of that capital is dedicated to knowing everything about us and pivoting that knowledge to the remote control of people for profit. I don't like that. This is how the age of surveillance capitalism becomes an age of conquest. You know, we're meant to sleepwalk through all of this. We're meant to be ignorant. This is engineered for our ignorance. Mark Zuckerberg says privacy is the future. Very confusing. They just really think that we're stupid. And because we're meant to sleepwalk through this, when something actually rises up out of the fog to send us a message, this is what happened with Cambridge Analytica, isn't it? Chris Wiley, here's the whistleblower now. Chris Wiley says, this is what we've been doing. That really got our attention. Let's just take a minute and look at what Chris said Cambridge Analytica was doing. He said, quote, we exploited Facebook to harvest millions of people's profiles. And then we built models to exploit what we knew about them and target their inner demons. Does that sound familiar? He says, the objective was behavioral micro-targeting, influencing voters based not on their demographics, but on their personalities. Does that sound familiar? He says, I think it's worse than bullying, because at least with bullying, people know what's being done to them. They have some kind of agency. With what we do, he said, people don't even know what's being done to them. He says, if you do not respect the agency of people, then anything you're doing after that point is not conducive to a democracy. Well, yeah, that's for sure. Then he concludes. He says, Cambridge Analytica was information warfare. Information warfare is impossible to prosecute without that information dominance, that information advantage. What more apt description of the treatment of those young people in Australia and New Zealand whose social anxieties were manipulated for profit than to say we built models to exploit their inner demons? How apropos is that? So here is this political consultancy that got the world's attention and still has the world's attention, when actually all it was a parasite in the host. And the host body was not just Facebook. The host body was surveillance capitalism itself. It's surveillance capitalism that provided the three things that the people who study information warfare say are essential for its success: the conditions, the weapons, and the opportunity. It was surveillance capitalism that provided the conditions through the ubiquitous datafication of human experience. It was surveillance capitalism that provided the weapons, the data, the methods, and the mechanisms, the predictive analyses, the intimate simulations of individuals, the behavioral micro-targeting, the techniques for subliminal influence and manipulation of social comparison dynamics, the mastery of hidden real-time experimentation, all of it pioneered in surveillance capitalism, the weapons. And finally, it was surveillance capitalism that provided the opportunity. The opportunity being the fact that all of these mechanisms can be applied while completely circumventing human awareness. It can all be done in secret. And that provides a massive opportunity for successful information warfare. The conclusion can only be that what we have failed to recognize is that it's not that Cambridge Analytica represents information warfare. And it's not that information warfare is strictly a function of the state or increasingly of even non-state but political actors. It turns out that surveillance capitalism and its illegitimate use of knowledge to power is best understood as the normalization and the institutionalization of information warfare for profit. That is the world that we are living in today. Okay. So I want to conclude with just a couple of thoughts that will allow us to turn the lights on in a minute without everybody feeling really depressed. Because you may not be able to tell right now from my voice, which is a little warped, but I'm actually very optimistic about our ability to change this. which is that as democratic societies, we have confronted grave problems in the past and we have overcome them. We ended the Gilded Age. We overcame totalitarianism. And in fact, we have used the levers of our democracy in order to ensure that the post-war world became a prosperous world for ordinary people. That the post-war world was the age of the middle class. Now we're living in a time when we understand that privacy is a collective action problem. And we have to look now to only one source for remedies here, and that source is democracy. That means law, and that means new regulatory paradigms. But I want to call your attention to at least two things that I think are immediately important, and once we start talking about them and begin to get used to them a little bit in our imaginations, they won't sound as strange as they might sound when I say them right now. The key thing that confronts us here is to interrupt the incentives for the surveillance dividend. We essentially need to outlaw the surveillance dividend. Once we do that, we open up the competitive space for the thousands and hundreds of thousands and indeed millions of young people, entrepreneurs, companies who want to produce digital products and services that will address climate, that will address our real needs, that will cure the cancers that plague us, that will do all of the things that we once expected from the digital. But they will be able to do them without having to compete on the surveillance dividend. That's what we need. So, two things I want to suggest. One is that we interrupt supply, and the other is that we interrupt demand. By interrupting supply, I mean that the illegitimate, secret, unilateral taking of human experience for translation into data should be illegal. The surveillance capitalists have fought for the right to take our faces whenever and wherever they want to. They take our faces on the street, they take our faces in the park. Our faces go into their facial recognition systems. Facial recognition systems train data sets. Data sets, we now find out, often sold to military operations, military divisions, including those military operations that are imprisoning members of the Uyghur minority in central China in an open-air prison where the only walls are facial recognition systems. That's what I mean, by the way. Privacy is not private. Okay, so we interrupt supply. The next thing that we can do is interrupt demand. And that means we eliminate the incentives to sell predictions of human behavior. How do we do that? We make markets that trade in human futures illegal. Markets that trade in human organs are illegal. Why? Because they have predictably destructive consequences for people and for democracy. Markets that trade in human slaves are illegal. Markets that trade in human babies are illegal because they have predictably destructive consequences. Markets that trade in human futures should be illegal, because they create epistemic inequality and epistemic injustice. So, now we're at the end. What do I want to say to you? the question is not are you old enough to know this, but are you young enough to know this? Greta Thunberg. Greta Thunberg says, our house is on fire, succinctly framing the climate crisis, cataclysm. Our house is on fire. I'd like to suggest that global warming is to the planet, our house, what surveillance capitalism is to society, our home. Not only is our house on fire, but our home is on fire. This fire, though, is not kindled in the implacable physics of the climate crisis. It's kindled in a human-made logic, a human-made economic logic. Anything that humans make can be unmade. All we have to do is decide, like the Berlin Wall. You decided, and ultimately it came down. Surveillance capitalists are rich and powerful, but they are not invulnerable. They have an Achilles heel. Do you know what that is? They fear law. They fear lawmakers who are not confused and intimidated. But ultimately, they fear you. They fear citizens who are ready to demand a digital future that we can call home. Thank you.
That was the conclusion of an hour-long talk by Shoshana Zuboff. She spoke on surveillance, capitalism, and democracy in Berlin, Germany, on November 6, 2019. She's the author of three books, In the Age of the Smart Machine, The Future of Work and Power, Foresaw How Computers Would Revolutionize the Modern Workplace. Her influential, The Support Economy, Why Corporations Are Failing Individuals, predicted the rise of computer-mediated products and services. Now her masterwork, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power, shows that users are the raw material for new procedures of manufacturing and sales that define an entirely new surveillance economy. Shoshana Zuboff is Professor Emerita at Harvard Business School. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.